Blog Talk Radio.
That's why I'm not here. Welcome to the Spirit of America Party and the Spirit of America Party book. Our headline tonight is Obama betrays his base, Democrat Party is finished. The communists pull at your heartstrings when they eat your heart out. The guy who lost big tonight was the Afro-American and all the American citizens on the bottom rung of the Democrat ladder. Tonight, at the ladder of no success. Tonight, the communist commander-in-chief played the Bible card. He made us feel guilty about the little baby being pulled from its mother's arms because she is an illegal. But he overlooked the 4,700 citizen babies that were pulled from their mother's wombs and thrown in the garbage today and every day until, at the end of the year, we have killed 1,200,000 American citizens. Al-Qaeda can't be that successful. This president looks the other way when citizen babies are being deprived of their LLP, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But tonight he plays on your heartstrings for the cause of Mother Russia. Watered down American education, destroyed by sex training, drug training, and rape kits with a big portion of communist ideology. Graduates loses in hoc to their professor's bottom line. This president says dumb college kids have created a need for imported graduates who took no sexual training, only and really want a job. And off they go to build the new USA while our dummies apply for jobs at Starbucks and Indian tea rooms. He has created a Hollywood-set economy. He has destroyed jobs of every kind, including the military, as he grants grants to further the cause of communism. Captains in the military are being laid off and given sergeant's pay, as they are told to be sure to take your cross with you. Three times tonight he invoked the God he hates to sell his divide-and-conquer plan. He mentioned the legal invaders are working three jobs to pay no taxes. He never said Americans work three jobs, one of which goes to paying taxes.
He is the laughingstock of the world. And when America sees him for what he really is, the Democrat Party is finished. Okay, that's my spiel based on that 20 minutes FU America talk tonight, and we will now go and see what we can do for a little bit of musica. We'll do Bambolero with the Gypsy Kings.
Ese amor llega así, esta manera,
la culpa. Caballo levanta vana, porque muy despreciado, por eso no te perdono llorar. Ese amor llega así, esta manera, no tiene la culpa. Amor de compraventa, amor del pasado. Ven, 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 ven. Bambolero, bambolera, porque mi vida yo la prefiero vivir así. Bambolero, bambolera, porque mi vida yo la prefiero vivir así. No te da perdón de Dios, tú eres mi vida, la fortuna del destino. El destino te desaparado, lo mismo ya callé, lo mismo soy yo. No te encuentro lavando, eres posible, no te encuentro de verdad. Por eso un día no cuento si de nada, lo mismo ya callé, lo pienso en ti. Bambolero, bambolera, porque mi vida yo la prefiero vivir así. Bambolero, bambolera, porque mi vida yo la prefiero vivir así.
Guy Mikey Weinstein has cost a military officer his job because it didn't cost him his job. It cost him to have an article removed from the local battalion newspaper because he mentioned God in it and his belief in God and how much God has helped him through life. And Mikey Weinstein called the commander of the base and said he's violating the laws of separation of church and state. Mikey Weinstein is an atheist. He's one of the golden calf people. Yeah, he's the one that Moses threw out of camp. Now he's an atheist. And so they removed this captain's article from the paper. How sad. The minority rules the majority. We're all slaves once again. This time we're multicolored. The other night I was talking about souls, the soul of a human being. And I reached out for a definition of soul. And this one comes from my religion. So I'm playing favorites. The glossary at the back of the U.S. version of the Catechism of the Catholic Church defines soul as follows. The spiritual principle of human beings. The soul is the subject of human consciousness and freedom. And you know what our Constitution says? Freedom comes from God, right? soul and body together form one unique human nature. Each human soul is individual and immortal, which means it travels through time and space. Immediately created by God. As soon as he thinks of you, as soon as he thinks of you in existence, he dispatches the soul to get there before you do. The soul does not die with the body, from which it is separated by death, and with which it will be reunited in the final resurrection. If you talk to nurses who experience a death sometimes on a daily basis, especially in old age homes, ask them if they ever felt the experience of the soul leaving the body with somebody they were taking care of. Ask them if they ever had that experience. You might be surprised at some of the answers. Here's more. The human person created in the image of God is a being at once a corporeal and spiritual. The biblical account expresses this reality in symbolic language when it affirms that then the Lord formed man of dust from the ground and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, as the first CPR. And man became a living being. Man, whole and entire, is therefore willed by God. In sacred scripture, the term soul often refers to human life or the human, entire human person. But soul also refers to the innermost aspect of man, that which is of greatest value in him, that by which he is most especially in God's image. Soul signifies the spiritual principle in man. The human body shares in the dignity of the image of God. We're all created in the image and likeness of God. Bob Grant had a show one day, and a guy called in, and he said to Bob Grant, "You know, Bob, we're all created in the image and likeness of God." And Bob snapped his head off. "How do you know that?" And I sent him an email the next day, and I said, "Bob, you're not going to believe this, but I was with God yesterday. We were shopping for suits, and God put on this blazer, really fancy-looking blazer, and he turned to me and he said, 'What do you think? Do I look like Bob Grant?'" I thought he'd get a chuckle out of that. So through his very bodily condition, he sums up himself in himself, the elements of the material world. Through him, they are thus brought to their highest perfection and can raise their voice in praise freely given to the Creator. For this reason, you got to see Harry Truman being sworn in as president. He pulls the Bible out of the judge's hands that's swearing him in, and he kisses it. I didn't see Obama do that. I didn't see Clinton do that. Yeah, Mike Savage says Clinton's a real phony. He always has the big Bible with the big cross, but he never opens it. You know, it's only for show. It's his show Bible. For this reason, a man may not despise his bodily life. Rather, he is obliged to regard his body as good and to hold it in honor, since God has created it and will raise it up again on the last day. The unity of soul and body is so profound that one has to consider the soul to be a form of the body. For example, it is because of its spiritual soul that the body made of matter becomes a living human body. Spirit and matter in man are not two natures united, but rather their union forms a single nature. It's like when they talk about marriage between a man and a woman, and the two shall become one. The church teaches that every spiritual soul is created immediately by God. It is not produced by the parents, and also that it is immortal. It does not perish when it separates from the body at death, and it will be reunited with the body at the final resurrection. And I imagine that even goes for cremation, and the ashes were spread throughout the sea. When Gabriel blows his horn, everything gets reunited. That's going to be some sight to see, huh? It does not perish when it separates from the body at death, and it will be reunited with the body at the final resurrection. Sometimes the soul is distinguished from the spirit. Saint Paul, for instance, prays that God may sanctify his people wholly with spirit and soul and body, kept sound and blameless at the Lord's coming. The church teaches that this distinction does not introduce a duality into the soul. Spirit signifies that from creation, man is ordered to a supernatural end, and that his soul can gratuitously be raised beyond all it deserves to communion with God. Spiritual tradition of the church also emphasizes the heart in the biblical sense of the depths of one's being, where the person decides for or against the God. Are you for or against God? It's very interesting, isn't it? It shows you that we're more than Hollywood stuntmen. Let me give you a tune. And see if we can find something appropriate, maybe. Oh, this is appropriate. This is appropriate. Let me see. I'm going to dedicate this to all the troops that are all over the world is serving tonight, putting their lives on the line. And may God protect them. And may their Thanksgiving and Christmas be blessed. And wherever you are, never despair. There is a saying that it is always darkest before the dawn. So never give up hope. Say a little prayer for whoever is out there tonight that's suicidal.
Behold the cross on which was hung, life's very Lord, God's darling. Mary's own babe, so cold and so still, helpless before her on Calvary Hill. Nails in his hand. Upon his cheek and his pierced heart.
being we were talking about the death of American children, there was a vote. Trying to see what day it was. Here it is. October 20th, 2003. 34 senators voted to stab a full-term child in the head exiting the Freedom Canal. I say every one of those 34 voted to burn the flag, and I checked, and I was off by five. 29 out of the 34 are flag burners and baby killers, and they are the hardcore party over country termites. And here they are. These are the partial birth abortion Democrats and a couple of Republican traitors. Daniel Akaka from Hawaii, these are all senators. Baucus from Montana. Jeff Bingaman from New Mexico. Barbara Boxer. Somebody ought to throw water on her and see if she melts. And maybe just before she melts, ask her what she did with Dorothy's dog, Toto. Maria Cantwell from Washington. Lincoln Chafee, I don't know if he's still governor of Rhode Island. But he's an evil man. He's the one that looks like Alfalfa from our gang. And you know what? On the way out, he gave Bush a screwing goodbye. He voted against Bush. Said, here, have one more. Oh, this one everybody knows. This is Hillary Clinton, the merciful. The 3 a.m. phone call receiver from Benghazi. No matter what time it is, she's not answering it. But she'll tell you that she's there ready at 3 o'clock. And then when they wanted to ask her questions, she got a blood clot until she was out of office, and then she was cured. Susan Collins from Maine. Little sweet lady. She goes around killing kids. Yeah. Remember this guy? John Corzine. You know, if you're a Democrat, you got a license to steal. John Corzine bought the governorship of New Jersey. He worked for Goldman Sachs. He was very wealthy. And I remember one instance. He bought the whole of black ministry in New Jersey. And he was up on a stage surrounded by black ministers. And somebody said, how much did you pay these guys to vote for you? And one of the ministers turned around and said to another minister, what did we say we were going to say last night? Unbelievable. Well, Corzine, he went back into business and he lost $1 billion and he doesn't know what happened to it. And they said, it's okay, you're a Democrat and we forgive you. Dayton, a Democrat from Minnesota. Christopher Dodd, this guy is he's going to a separate hell. They got one reserved for him. Dick Durbin will be there right with him. They'll all be down here with Ted Kennedy in Boiler Number 3. Russell Feingold. This, remember McCain Feingold? I never trusted McCain when he did that bill with Feingold. Dianne Feinstein. Take no prisoners, Feinstein, especially if they're in the womb. Graham, Senator Graham from Florida. He was on the Military Intelligence Committee when we got hit on 9/11, and his question was, what did Bush know, and when did he know it? But nobody ever asked him, you were the head of the Intelligence Committee, what did you know? So none of your business. Harkin, the Herald Angels ain't singing about this guy. He's a flag burner also. In a way, from Hawaii, I think Akaka, the two senators, have died. They were both war veterans. I think they were both at Monte Cassino in World War II with the Nisei Battalion. And they voted to burn the flag. You know how many guys, how many buddies they must have seen die for that flag? And they voted. You know why they voted? Because the Democrat Party over country told them to vote the way they wanted that vote to come out. And that's why they did it. And to me, they betrayed all of the guys who fell. From Vermont. He's an independent. It's a fancy word for communist. I think after this speech tonight, you're going to see a lot of Democrats wiggling their way over to the Republican Party. Those who want to stay in politics because they know that Obama's on a crash course to destroy the party. And everything he does is to hurt America. And eventually, it's even a blind man's going to be able to see that. And then there's going to be hell to pay. The sad part about them wiggling on over to be with the Republican Party is they'll just make the Rhino Party stronger. And the new Democrat Party will be the Republican Party. Kennedy from Massachusetts, well, we know where he is. Kerry, he's now doing damage internationally with his clenched fist. Cole from Wisconsin. A lot of these guys are out of office already. Lautenberg, he's gone. He replaced Torricelli, who voted to burn and skim. Levin, he's leaving. And Carlos the Jekyll, 11. Joe Lieberman, he got over on both parties. He's a great guy. He's easy to work with. Yeah, he's only got the one problem. He votes to kill kids and burn the flag. Yeah, he's a credit to the Ten Commandments. Yeah, he's following in Moses' footsteps. How orthodox, I say. And now he has a beard. When I did this story, I said, now he has a beard. Is it to get over on Hasidim? Or is it to blend in when the Iranians, I call them the Iranians, take over? And I said, this guy's getting away with murder. Yeah, he was a smoothie. Barbara Mikulski from Maryland. She's a flag burner and a baby killer. Patty Murray from Washington State, a flag burner and a baby killer. Bayonet the Babies Nelson, a flag burner and a baby killer. Let me tell you about this guy. He was at the door, blocking the door with his party of death when Terry Schiavo, when the Democrats went in and pulled the feeding tube from Terry Schiavo. He was there. I call him Bill Bayonet the Babies Nelson. And you know where else he was? I've got a picture. If you go to this website, www.mediacrapmatters.org, you will find a picture of Nancy Pelosi, Dennis Kucinich, individual shots. Dennis Kucinich, Nancy Pelosi, and Bill Bayonet the Babies Nelson. He was an astronaut. Yeah, but they wouldn't let him go to the moon because they were afraid, even though there's no oxygen there, he would find a way to burn the flag. Those three are on that website at the bottom of an anti-communist blog. And each one is sitting individually with Bashar al-Assad. And if you remember, Nancy Pelosi demanded from the Air Force a larger jet. She said because she commutes to California every other day. And she demanded that the Air Force give her a long-range jet because of her commute. And then she took the jet that they gave her and she filled it with 41 communists or Democrats, whatever your choice is. They loaded it with about, I think it was $50,000 worth of booze and liqueurs. And they flew to Damascus, Syria, and they visited Bashar al-Assad. And Bashar took Nancy Pelosi, the Catholic, to a mosque. And it is reported that, according to tradition, that this is the mosque that Jesus is going to reappear in. And for 40 days, he's going to kill all the Jews. And Nancy Pelosi was there, yesing Bashar to death. Yes. And then she asked them to close the palace windows because the sounds of GIs having their legs blown off in Iraq was traveling. and it was interfering with her speech. And that's how much this country has been betrayed. Reed from Rhode Island. Bad. Bad man. Flag burner and a baby killer. Rockefeller from West Virginia. Flag burner and a baby killer. This is all party over country people. Paul Sarbanes from Maryland. Flag burner and a baby killer. Chuck Schumer from New York. This is one guy that's evil, man. This one, he's going to come out and say he's an atheist one day. I call him the American Holocaust creator. Did you ever see when Bush was trying to appoint a Latino to the Supreme Court? And he picked a highly well-studied congressional constitutional expert. And his name was Judge Estrada. Well read, very intelligent, knew constitutional law in and out. And he was being vetted by the communists, and Chuck Schumer took over the vetting. And Judge Estrada had a speech impediment, and he stuttered. And Schumer would hit him with a question, and as he stuttered the answer out, Schumer would hit him with a second question before he finished the first question answer. And he had a smirk on his face as the guy stuttered his way through telling Schumer what Schumer didn't want to hear. And that's Chuck Schumer. And Chuck Schumer was also the spokesperson for the kidnapping of Ilian Gonzalez under the Clintonistas, who were making a deal with Fidel Castro in exchange for future benefits. Oh, you can't prove that. You know the difference between a Republican thief and a Democrat thief? When they're caught, the Republican thief says, I didn't do it. The Democrat thief says, you can't prove it. So, who else is on there? Olympia Snow. So, both from Maine. And I say she's very frail and delicate, like a newborn baby. And she believes in slipping the knife, the bayonet into the skull before the kid can see what America looks like. And Debbie Stabenow, how appropriate, stabs him any way she can, in the head and on the battlefield. Ron Wyden from Oregon. And there were two that didn't vote. You know who didn't vote? John Edwards and Kay Bailey Hutchinson from Texas. She's a Republican. So, you think your kids are safe? Here's a list of people to take off your babysitter list. So, having said that, let me give you another tune, and then I'm going to try and find something I read today about the Crusaders. So, we'll do a little rock and roll. Do a little Blue Moon. Bomb, 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 dang, 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 ding, dong, ding, blue moon, 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 blue moon, dip, 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 moon, 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 blue moon, dip, 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 moon, 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 dip, 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 bomb, 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 dang, 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 ding, dong, ding, blue moon. You saw me standing alone without a dream in my heart. Dang it, dang, dang, ding it on the blue moon. You knew just what I was there for. You heard me saying a prayer for someone I really didn't care for. And then there suddenly appeared before me the only one my arms would ever. Whisper, please adore me.
bom 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 dang 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 ding dong ding boo. Bomb 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 dang 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 ding dong ding boo.
So like that, give you a little Brazilian.
Como um bom bocado pra te devorar, como um brigadeiro pra te lambuzar. Põe a mão no bolo pra comemorar, dança o miudinho pra te conquistar. O violeiro toca e se toca, de olho no chifre da morena. Aqui zoeira, que festa de arromba. Põe essa galera pra samba, é de
down in the Caribbean on vacation, was sitting in an airport, and I'm talking to a guy, and he was from Italy. I think it was Italy. It might have been Austria. And he said that one of his ancestors had been at the Battle of Vienna, which repelled the Turks, the Muslims. And I was quite impressed, you know, because only being first-generation American, you know, I could maybe trace my ancestors back maybe 1.5 generations. Here's a guy that was at the Battle of Vienna against the Muslims. I found this on, this came through from the Tea Party. It's called The Crusades. a direct response to Islam's bloodlust. And the thing that scratched me, gave me an itch, was the fact that they haven't changed much in their tactics of submission. Submit to Islam or die. Most of us infidels in the West have been lied to, trusting the education system foolishly. The education system in the United States is nothing but a brainwashing camp. It is really sad, absolutely sad. I heard somebody talking today that said they ought to pass a law that no Spanish after 2 years of school. Trusting the education system foolishly, we believed all the bunk bundled in our textbooks concerning the period in history, 1096 A.D. to 1272 A.D. A.D. stands for Anno Domini, in the year of our Lord. And that's how history is written. B.C. or A.D. B.C. before Christ. And the communists tried to change it to BCE, before the communist era. Yeah. But 1096 AD to 1272 AD is when the Crusades took place. The real reason why the Crusades took place, and here's the shocker, it was a response to Islam's aggression. That's right. It all began with Muhammad's implicit threat more than 450 years before the Crusaders entered Jerusalem. He said, embrace Islam and you will be safe. And that was in his extortion letter to the Khaybar Jews. Some facts for your ill-informed friends, family, and colleagues. The Crusades were a delayed response for centuries of Muslim aggression that grew ever fiercer in the 11th century. I saw the movie Kingdom of God. I loved that movie. And I watched it at least 6 or 7 times. The female actress in it played a fabulous role. And Jeremy Irons did. And the young man, I don't know him, the actor who played the son of Liam Neeson. They all played good. It was an excellent movie. And it showed a side that to the Muslims that could make you sympathetic. And perhaps Saladin was played correctly, but who knows? Saladin was shown as a merciful man. And the Templar Knights were shown as vicious people. But they weren't all bad. It was just that even back then, the Democrat media was painting bad pictures. So the Crusades were a delayed response for centuries of Muslim aggression that grew even fiercer in the 11th century. The Muslims focused on Christians and Jews, forcing conversions, plundering, and mortally wounding apostates. Did you know that imams get 20% of all booty taken in jihad? I think that's current. The Crusades were a defensive action, first called for by Pope Urban II in 1095 at the Council of Clermont. The Crusades were a response against jihad, which is obligatory against non-Muslims entering Muslim lands. And Muslim lands are any lands invaded and conquered by Islam. The motives of the Crusaders were pure. They were jihad provoked and not imperialistic actions against a peaceful native Muslim population. The Crusades were not for profit, but rather to recover the Holy Land, brutally invaded and conquered by Muslims, who conquered for profit and as a notch on their superiority belt. The lands conquered by the Crusaders were not colonized under the Byzantine Empire. The Empire withdrew its support, so the Crusaders renounced their agreement. So, and here's, let's see if there's more. Okay, more. We'll see if we can get more. for a better look at the situation, check out this article. Okay. So we already said that part. Okay. You know what happens? They get a lot of pop-ups. I apologize for wasting your time. Okay, the Crusades were a defensive action first called for by Pope Urban. The Islamic world ripped through the Christian world on a bloody jihad crusade to propagate Islam. Muslim imperialistic conquest wars were launched for more than 1,500 years against hundreds of nations and over millions of square miles, larger than the British Empire at its peak. The Jihad Crusade went from southern France to the Philippines, where the Philippines have problems today with Muslims. And from Austria to Nigeria, and from Central Asia to New Guinea. The dictionary defines imperialism as the policy and practice of seeking to dominate the economic and political affairs of weaker countries. This historical Islamic jihad was imperialistic, and its goals remain the same. Islam's greed and lust for bloody domination of non-Muslims and their property caused the Crusades. It doesn't get simpler than that. Okay. Looks like I lost my place. I'm going to jump to a tune for you. And when I come back, I will have my place. What kind of tune do you want to hear? That's a short one. Oh, here's one. This is one about the new economy.
They used to tell me I was building a dream, and so I followed the mob. When there was earth to plow or guns to bear, I was always there, right on the job. They used to tell me I was building a dream with peace and glory ahead. Why should I be standing in line just waiting for bread? Once I built a railroad, made it run, made it race against time. Once I built a railroad, now it's done. Brother, can you spare a dime? Once I built a tower to the sun, brick, mortar, and lime. Once I built a tower, now it's done. Brother, can you spare a dime? Once in khaki suits, he will look swell, full of that Yankee doodle-dee-dum. Half a million boots went marching through hell, and I was a kid with a drum. Hey, don't you remember? They called me Al. It was Al, Al all the time. Say, don't you remember? I'm your pal. Brother, can you spare a dime? Once I built a railroad, I made it run, and I made it race against time. Once I built a railroad, now it's done. Hey, brother, ain't got a dime about you, have you? And once I built a tower, yes, a tower to the sun, of brick, mortar, and lime. Yes, I'm the fella built the tower, and now it's done. Hey, buddy, ain't got a dime about you, have you? Once in khaki suits, he will look swell, full of that Yankee doodle-dee-dum. Half a million boots went marching through hell, and I was a kid with a drum. remember? Don't you remember? They called me Al. It was Al. Al all the time. Don't you remember? I'm your pal. Brother, can you spare? Oh, die.
Okay, back to the Crusades. The Feast of Our Lady of Victory. You know, when I start talking to the separation of church from state people, and they start talking about taking God off and God We Trust off the money, I said, well, you might as well take the statue of the Blessed Mother down off the top of the Capitol dome. They said, that's not a statue of the Blessed Mother. That's the statue of Victory. I says, yeah, Our Lady of Victory. And then they have to go down to Washington and get a close-up. Yeah, or they could Google it. Yeah. And for those who know little history, today's battle with the Islamic State in the Middle East may seem new and unprecedented. It is not. In A.D. 622, Mohammed set out from Medina. Medina's in Saudi Arabia. To conquer the whole Christian world for Allah by force of arms. Within 100 years, his successors had occupied and pillaged every Christian capital of the Middle East, from Antioch through North Africa, the home of St. Augustine, and Spain. All that remained outside Allah's reign was the northern arc from southern France to Constantinople. What we are seeing in 2014 has a history of more than 1,300 years. Think about that. We're only about, what, 270? A very bloody, a terror-ridden history, except that today the struggle is far, far more secular than religious. A war over political institutions and systems of law, with almost no public argument over religious doctrine. Edward Gibbon, in The Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire, and they got a year, 1776 to 1778, maybe that's when he did the book, describes how tall Islamic minarets could have been seen in Oxford before his birth, and the accents in its markets would have been Arabic. The interpretation of the Quran, which now be taught in the schools of Oxford and her pulpits, might demonstrate to a circumcised people that sanctity and truth of the revelation of Mohammed. Gibbon was writing about the decisive battle of Poitiers in A.D. 732, when at last a Christian leader, Charles Martel, a.k.a. Charlie the Hammer, drove back the Muslims from their high water mark in Western Europe with such force that they went reeling backwards into Spain. From there, it took Spain another 750 years until 1492. Oh, we know that date. That's the date that the communists don't want to give credit to Christopher Columbus. To drive Islamic armies back into North Africa, whence they had invaded. Even so, the Islamic terror bombers, who just a few years ago killed more than 100 commuters in Madrid, did so, they announced, to avenge the Spanish Reconquista of 1492. For Islam to lose a territory once Muslim is to incur a religious obligation to wrest it back. It had been a marvel in 732 that just over 100 years earlier, Mohammed had launched his army from Medina to conquer, in rapid fire succession, so many of the most glorious capitals, cities of Christianity: Jerusalem, Antioch, Alexandria, Hippo, Tunis, Carthage, and then all of Spain. Most amazingly still, Muslims very quickly went farther into the Far East than Alexander the Great ever had. Even today, in the eyes of political Islamists, the expansion of Islam is far from finished.
The dynamic obligation at the heart of their Islam is to conquer the world for Allah and to incorporate it in all the great Islamic Ummah. Only then will the world be at peace. Submission to Allah is the reason the world was created. For more than 1,000 years after 622, Southern Europe had to give active military resistance to the Saracens, as the Islamists came to be known in the West. For 600 of those 1,000 years, a huge sea war ensued for control of the Mediterranean, but war by land was not called off. The Turks, who took over the Arab world, expanded their empire in all four directions on the map. For more than a century, they made an attempt after attempt to take down the largest and richest of the Christian capitals. Constantinople, whose walls they finally breached in 1453. There followed the great plunder, huge fires of destruction, the desecration of Christian basilicas and churches, murder and torture. Thousands of Christian men, women, and children were marched off towards slavery in the East. A long line of the great warrior sultans sponsored Turkish advances in shipbuilding, gunnery, military organization, and training. By the mid-1550s, they had slowly conceived of a long-term offensive, a pincers movement, first by sea and then by land, to conquer the whole northern shore of the Mediterranean. Their ultimate aim was to take all of Italy, then all Europe. First, in 1565, they launched a massive sea attack. This one's very interesting. On the crossroads of the Mediterranean, the strategically placed island of Malta. They were repelled after an epic siege, which in itself is one of history's great stories. A later northern pincers movement by land was aimed at an attack up through the Balkans for the conquest of Budapest, and then in a northeast arc to Slovakia and Poland. In this way, the Muslim forces would essentially encircle Italy from the north, the capture of Vienna, and thus the cutting off of Italy for easy conquest was the prize most sought. Because by 1540, the Reformation had begun separating the Christian nations of the north from Rome, the sultans soon recognized that the Christian world would no longer fight as one. The next 100 years or so would be the most fruitful time since 632 to fulfill the destiny of Islam in Europe. At last, Don Juan of Austria, the younger brother of the King of Spain, an illegitimate son, stood erect and summoned allies to repel the much-anticipated Muslim advance. He aimed at leading a large fleet to go after the new Muslim fleet preemptively before they could depart from their home seas. The principal battles of Malta and Famagusta, 1565 and 1571. When I come back, we will talk about those. The one from Malta is really interesting. Okay. What are we going to give you? We give you Caljada, Brazil. Thank you.
We're back. Okay, I may run out of time. They may cut me off, but we'll continue. The preliminary battles of Malta and Famagusta, 1565 and 1571. Each new caliph of the Islamic Empire was expected to expand the existing Muslim territories. In order to fulfill Islam's mission and gain for the leader the necessary popularity and legitimacy. So it was that in the pleasant springtime of 1571, an entire Muslim fleet under Ali Pasha was ordered by the Sultan to seek out and destroy Christian dominance of the Mediterranean Sea, all the way up to Venice. During the summer, Ali Pasha raided fort after fort along the Adriatic coast, picked up thousands of hostages as slaves, and sent at least a small squadron to blockade for 2 or 3 days the approaches to St. Mark's Square in Venice, not least to plant the seed of terror about worse things to come. Much more. Let me see. Much more. The Feast of Our Lady of Victory. How the 1571 Battle of Lepanto saved Europe. You know, when people squabble amongst each other, their enemies see an opportunity to kill all of them. Remember that when Obama plays black against white, gay against straight, male against female. Remember that. There are people watching, waiting for the moment of weakness. Okay. So here's what they're saying. Meanwhile, another large Muslim force soon conquered Cyprus, inflicting ritual cruelties on the defeated population of Nicosia, setting fire to churches, beheading the older women, and marching all younger Christians of both sexes into slavery. The Muslim armies then headed north for the fortress of Famagusta, the last Venetian stronghold on the island, the extended arm of the trading posts and protected forts of the Venetian navy in the entire eastern Mediterranean. An army of 100,000 opened the siege against a force of, guess how many? 15,000 behind the walls. You've got Obama sending 3,000 troops as advisors into Iraq. Are you kidding me? Under the energetic generalship of the elderly General Marc Antonio Bragadino, the small band of defenders held out for week after week, despite receiving more than, listen to this count, 180,000 incoming cannonballs. The defenders ran short of food, that in the end they were eating cats until finally they consumed the last one. The Muslim general was outraged by the length of the siege, which already cost him 80,000 men, killed by 15,000. Of his best men, even though Famagusta's fate was sealed from the first days, yet there were still long days and sometimes nights of hand-to-hand fighting just outside the walls. Muslim losses kept getting fully replenished by sea, and the Muslim forces grew stronger as the Christians got down to their last 6 barrels with only 400 men out of 15,000 still able left to fight. How's that, huh? Amazing, isn't it? Let's see if we can get to the rest of the story. Please, don't do this to me. We'll jump to a tune. Let's see what we get. Forgive me. Forgive me. Here's one. We'll go to church. We'll say a prayer.
In the chapel of pain. of dreams.
Chapel of dreams. Chapel of dreams. Chapel.
As we watch ISIL behead these people, these young guys, and how easily they're fooled. They all want to live, and ISIL says, yeah, just pose for this picture. We're going to make believe we're cutting your throat, and we're going to film it to scare other people, and then we'll set you free. And then they cut their throats. You would think that with thousands of years of history of the art of the dagger, that these Arabs would know that they're going to die and they would fight to the finish. Save the last bullet for yourself. On August the 1st, General Bragadino finally surrendered. And the surrender terms guaranteed safe passage for all his men to sail home to Venice, and safety to all citizens of the walled city. So he walked out with full scarlet regalia of his office, out from the walls and down to the tent of Alfa Mustafa, the victorious commander. There, the two leaders conversed. Then something went wrong, and Mustafa grew visibly angry and called for his men to behead the full complement of 350 survivors of 15,000. Who had laid down their arms to march out with Bragadino. All 350 bleeding heads were piled up just outside Mustafa's tent. Mustafa then ordered Bragadino's ears and nose chopped off. They do that in Afghanistan today. Men do it to Afghani women. And they cut it on an angle so that the woman looks like a pig. And they forced the man to go down on all fours, wearing a dog's collar around his neck, to the jibes, mockery, and horror of the onlookers. Bags of earth were strapped over Bragadino's back, and he was made to carry them to the walls of the fortification and to kiss the earth each time he passed Mustafa. As the old man grew fainter from the loss of blood from his head, he was tied to a chair, put in a rope harness, and hoisted up to the highest mast in the fleet, so all the survivors of the city might see his humiliation. Then Bragadino's chair was dropped in free fall into the water and brought out again. The tortured Venetian was led in ropes to the town square and stripped. This is almost like the crucifixion. At a stone column, which still stands today, Bragadino's hands were tied, outstretched over his head. And the executioner stepped forward with sharp knives to carefully remove his skin, keeping it whole. Before the carver had reached Bragadino's waist, the man was dead. His full skin was then stuffed with straw, once again raised up to the highest mast, and sailed around to various ports as a trophy of victory, and finally taken back to Istanbul for permanent exhibition. Meanwhile, Don Juan had put the Christian fleet of some 200 vessels on course towards Lepanto, where Ali Pasha was refitting his vessels in the safe protection of an impregnable harbor. When a fast corsair dispatched from Famagusta arrived to deliver the tale of the dishonors visited on General Bragadino and his 350 surviving soldiers, the blood of the Venetians boiled. Now they allowed no question of turning back. They were determined to avenge the horrors suffered by their comrades in arms. The young Don Juan was buoyed by the new resolve. Now he would be able to keep the vow he had made to Pope Pius V to seek out and destroy the threatening enemy. He was 22 years old and an admiral, and he felt confident in his battle plan. He had taken care to have his whole fleet rehearse their roles in the quiet seas of the Adriatic just before turning towards Lepanto. Don Juan and many of his men spent much of the night before the battle of October 7th in prayer.
the fate of their civilization they knew depended on their good fortune on the morrow. The uncertainties of the changing wind and choppy seas and the speed of two onrushing lines of ships rapidly closing on each other would create unpredictable havoc. The odds against the Christians and ships were like 350 to 250, but the Christians had a secret weapon. And this was the greatest sea battle in history. They're saying it was the greatest sea battle. 1571. For more than 3 years, Pope Pius V had labored mightily to sound alarms about the deadly Muslim buildup in the shipyards of Istanbul. The Sultan had been stung by the surprising defeat of his own overwhelming invasion force in Malta in 1565. The savagery of Muslim attacks on the coastal villages of Italy, Sicily, Dalmatia, and Greece were ratcheted upwards. Three or four Muslim galleys would offload hundreds of marines who would sweep through a village, tie all its healthy men together for shipment out to become galley slaves. Remember that, galley slaves. March away many of the women and young boys and girls for shipment to Eastern harems. Young boys and girls. And then gather all the elderly into the village church where the helpless victims would be beheaded and sometimes cut up into little pieces to strike terror into other villages. The Muslims believed that future victims would lose heart, and that's their strategy today, and swiftly surrender when Muslim raiders arrived. Over three centuries, the number of European captives kidnapped from villages and beaches by these pirates climbed into the hundreds of thousands. From the halls of Montezuma to the shores of Tripoli, we wouldn't pay the ransom money. And the slogan at that time was millions for defense, not a penny for tribute. And here today we're going around, we don't even know how much money we give away because too many government agencies got their hands in the till. Over three centuries, the number of European captives kidnapped from villages went to hundreds of thousands. The reason for this kidnapping was the naval appetite for fresh backs and muscles. It was insatiable. Most galley slaves lived more than 5 years, little more. They were chained to hard benches in the burning Mediterranean sun, slippery in their own excrement, urine, and intermittent vomiting, often never lying down to sleep. The dark vision that troubled the Pope during the late 1560s was of even more horrible calamities to befall the whole Christian church bit by bit, Christian world. But unity in Europe was hard to find, and even more scarce was the will to fight for survival. Yeah, we see that today. Having seen Muslim ferocity firsthand, however, the Venetian public was determined to contribute a fleet to the task. Their support was crucial, for Venice was in those days the shipbuilding and gunnery capital of the world, producers for a profit of the most innovative, most versatile, stoutest, and most seaworthy armed vessels in the world. The best sea captains of Venice were the most eager to avenge their friends and fellow citizens. For years, Venice had preferred peace with the Muslim East in order to carry on their lucrative international trade. Now there was a cause that took precedence over the traditions of commerce. Genoa, too, contributed a fleet under their famous but now elderly, wait till you hear this admiral's name, what do you think it is? Andrea Doria. That's the ship, the Andrea Doria, that sunk. Remember, it got hit by the Stockholm. There was a classic picture of a girl who was sleeping in a berth in the Andrea Doria, and when the Stockholm pulled out from the bow of the Andrea Doria, her bed was pulled out and she ended up on the Stockholm. And they had a picture of her as it was taken. The Knights of Malta, the premier sea warriors of the time, offered their small but highly skilled fleet in support of the Pope's appeal and agreed to work cooperatively with Don Juan. You may have to read the rest of this tomorrow if you're interested. If you're not, I'll play you some music.
Let's see what this says here. Don Juan, whom his contemporaries described as a modest and humble man, characteristically set aside his own ego for the sake of the cause that engaged him. He pledged to the Armada a large contingent supplied by Spain and Portugal. By the end of September 1571, eager to get their job done before winter turned the seas choppy, the four Christian distinct parts of the Christian fleet sailed past Italy, hugging the coast, sending teams of observers to land to pick up the latest intelligence on the Muslim force. Finally, they learned that an enormous Muslim fleet, nearly 100 ships larger than their own, was sailing near to land towards the Gulf of Lepanto. "No more talking," Don Juan told his leading admirals. "Now battle." Keeping the Knights of Malta in reserve for just a short distance behind the main battle line, Don Juan, everybody has reserves, man. Everybody. The guys that led the Americans into Benghazi to die and never backed them up. Never backed them up by land, sea, or air. That is a total classic failure. And all who are responsible should get the death penalty. Don Juan assigned the impassioned Venetians the important left flank, with its leftmost ships close to the shoreline. He himself commanded 100 vessels at the center. In plain sight was his capital ship, the Real, its banners of leadership visible to all. To the right flank he assigned the venerable Andrea Doria and the Genoese fleet. The plan was to hold his ships in as long and straight a line as seamanship in a besetting wind would allow, while heading directly for the Muslim line. At his front, however, Don Juan placed a nasty surprise for Ali Pasha. 6 new, taller, sturdier ships packed with cannons, especially in the bow, and heavily laden with lead and shot, placed themselves a mile forward of the Christian line. They looked flat on top like merchant ships. No one had ever seen ships before like this. They lacked the bow rising up skywards, the one necessary weapon for vicious ramming. For the purpose of these new galleasses, as they were called, was not to ram oncoming ships, but to blast them with an array of cannons. Their shot could carry a mile with great accuracy. When the galleasses turned sideways, they could blast with even more cannons designed for shorter ranges, often aiming their cannon just at the waterline of their foes. They had the power to sink a smaller, lighter, faster Muslim galley with a single burst. At first, the two fleets spotted each other on the horizon as single masts, but then they were visible in small numbers, and only as the two fleets closed to about 2 miles of each other could any one of the 200,000 sailors, marines, and janissaries on board catch a glimpse of the lines and dispositions of the fleets. The Muslims preferred to attack in a crescent rather than a straight line, but the winds at their back and tricky tides from the shoreline to the north forced them to straighten up their lines. Those who gazed on the massive array of ships and sails were filled with awe. One of those to be wounded in this battle, you know who got wounded in this battle? The great author Miguel de Cervantes. That's Don Quixote, the guy that wrote Don Quixote. Later wrote of the most noble and memorable event that past centuries have seen. Just over 600 ships in two amazingly orderly lines, each stretched 3 miles end to end. They bore down on one another as the distance closed. A sense of destiny weighed upon all. The huge green battle flag of Allah, his name embroidered on it in Arabic some 29,800 times, tall capital ship as Sultana, on which the fearsome young admiral Ali Pasha held command. Pasha was puzzled by the 6 more or less flat barges out in front of the Christian lines. His own armed soldiers were reliant mostly on clouds of arrows. His sailors had mastered the arts of ramming and of disgorging massive boarding parties onto the enemy's slippery decks. then beating down their defenders by a source of fierce land warfare out on the open sea. In those days, sea warfare was like land warfare, only carried out on open decks side by side instead of in open fields. Ships were lashed to ships, sometimes a dozen together. Hand-to-hand combat was the key. There is no point here in giving the whole narrative. Suffice to say that in the center, the volleys from the galleasses out in front destroyed one Muslim vessel after another. Masts snapped, the oars of the galleys were shattered, and huge holes opened up the thin wooden sides of the galleys to the boiling sea. The Muslim ships that were not sunk were easily boarded by the Christian ships coming alongside, built a little higher and amply supplied, not only with boarding nets, but even more important, with ranks of the old-style predecessors to rifles, arquebuses, directing point-blank rifle balls into the unarmored flesh of Muslim archers. It is true that in a few cases, whole clouds of Muslim arrows felled many in Christian ships, including the great Venetian commander Agostino Barbarigo, who was shot in the eye. But most of the Christian warriors wore the latest in body armor, which repelled wooden arrows harmlessly. Nonetheless, at least one Christian ship was later found aimlessly afloat, with every single man dead or wounded. And at last, the two capital ships, Real and Sultana, clashed head-on, and Don Juan led the final boarding party, which in its ferocity drove Ali Pasha to the aft poop, that's the deck, where he soon fell with a bullet in his eye. The Muslim admiral's head was cut off and borne aloft on a pike to be mounted on the bow of the Real. The seas around were filled with cloaks, caps, struggling bodies, and vast wooden wreckage of battle, and floating in the churning water, large splotches of red blood. On the Christian left, the Venetians attacked with almost blind rage and broke the line of the Muslim right with relative ease. They were aided by a revolt of the galley slaves on board a number of Muslim vessels, who in the explosions on board had their chains broken and poured up on the deck swinging their chains left and right. So great was the Venetian fury that even after the battle, many of its sailors spent hours using their pikes to kill Muslim sailors and soldiers struggling in the sea. They tried to excuse their bloodlust by saying that they never wished to see those men sailing against the West again. So in 4 hours, 40,000 men had died and 1,000 more were wounded, more than in any other battle in history, more than even at Salamis, and in years to come at the Somme. Never again did the Muslim fleet pose a grave danger to Europe. So, having said that, I'm going to hit a tune and say sayonara until we meet again, and pray for your country, because we're in a lot of trouble and a lot of people don't know it, and see what we got. We'll close with White Christmas.
Of a white Christmas, just like the ones I used to know, where those treetops listen and children listen to hear sleigh bells in the snow, the snow. Where the treetops listen and they
Have a nice night, folks.